Today, Shir Mesechta Basra Daf Kuf Nun Tes. We will begin Bezer Hashem Yisbarach and Daf Kuf Nun Ches on the Beis, four lines from the bottom. Shalch Mitam, they sent the following halacha from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Ben Shalava Ben Nechse Ovev B'chaya Ovev. Somebody who, a son, who borrowed from his father's assets while his father was alive, Umeis, and then his father passed away. B'nai Moitzi Miyad L'chuchis, his son could take the property back from the people who bought those property, and says the Gemara, V'zui Kosha B'dinei Mamnis. And this is a halacha in Dinei Mamnis that is difficult to understand. And says the Gemara, Lava my Mapak, the entire statement is a difficult statement to understand. The Mishnah, the Gemara spoke about a son who borrowed money and now taking property back from those who bought that property. What's going on here? Where the buyers, where the borrowers, says the Gemara Itmar, the halacha that was taught, says the Gemara Hachitma. This is what the halacha was that was taught. Ben Shemacha ben Nechse Ovev B'chaya Ovev. Reuven's father has assets. Reuven, of course, is a potential Yorish of some or all of those assets. And the question that's being discussed here was that he sold those assets while his father was alive under the assumption that his father is going to pass away. And his father passes away, he will become the owner of those assets. But what happened was, Mace, instead of, as was expected, that Yaakov, the father, will die before Reuven, the son, but actually what happened was, Reuven died before Yaakov, and Chanoich, who is the son of Reuven, now goes to those people who bought the assets from his father, Reuven, goes to those people who bought those assets from his father's Reuven, and Miyad L'Kuchos, he takes those assets back without even having to have to pay them back the amount that they paid his father Reuven for those properties. And says the Gemara, now we understand the statement, V'zui Kasha B'dinei Mamnis, why this is a very difficult halacha to understand. Because, says the Gemara, V'leim Relei, the people to whom Reuven sold the assets, and now Chanoich is taking back those assets, should say to him, your father sold us these assets on the expectation when he'll be the Yorish. And now you who are coming from your father, because you are his Yorishim, Avucha Mazbin, your father sold those assets to us, and now Va'at Mapik, and you're trying to take back those assets. Why are you not respecting what your father sold? Especially since your connection to these assets, especially because your connection to these assets are only because of your father Reuven. And your father Reuven sold us those assets. So, say the Rishonim, explaining our Gemara, that what is the basis of Chanoich taking those assets? Because Reuven wasn't really the owner of those assets at this time, because Yaakov was still alive. And at the end, Reuven predeceased Yaakov. And they go on to say, even though, as we've been quoting often our shiurim, the opinion of Rameyer, the other Magda Dovah Shalai B'Loilam, but even Rameyer, who says other Magda Dovah Shalai B'Loilam, so we, as we often explain, that's only Dekel Perosov, where the Dekel is already here. But in this case, the Dekel isn't even here. So certainly, he has no right to sell those assets, and that's why Chanoich could say, as we're going to learn, Chanoich could even say, even Chanoich could say that I don't know what, why that sale should be something that I should respect. And as Tosfos, because of this, says, the discussion in our Gemara was never if that sale is a valid sale. There's no way that anybody could make the argument that this sale should be considered a valid sale. The question that Tosfos says is the discussion in our Gemara is that he wants to, that these people want to get back their money that they had paid Reuven. And the discussion in the Gemara is that Chanoich says, the money that you paid to my father Reuven, I don't know anything about, and I don't have any, and I don't have to return that money. Another pshat that Tosfos suggests, going back to sugi that we learned earlier in our Masechta, that the way Reuven, the son of Yaakov, had access to these assets was because Yaakov said, Mahayoyim la'achamisa. And we explained that when a father gives a son assets, property, with a statement of Mahayoyim la'achamisa, the way that statement is to be understood, that the son becomes the owner of the keren from today, of the principal today, and he only gets rights to the payris after the passing of his father. So therefore, since the son has some level of ownership here, that's why the Lekucha should say our purchase of these assets should be recognized as a valid purchase, and now you, Chanoich, should not be Chanoich should not be able to undo that. Another approach that I saw in the Rishonim is that we're speaking about a Shchimera, very much a continuation of many of the sugyas that we've been learning. And since when a Shchimera gives away his assets, that's a very strong level of gift. So maybe that's why it should be different. Similar pshat is we're not speaking just about assets, that somebody has no connection to those assets, and now he's selling assets. Of course, to sell assets that you have no connection to, and now you become, and now you're going to say, well, I should be I'm to some degree the owner of those assets, and I could sell those assets, is hard to understand. But here, as we keep on repeating, we're speaking about a Yoyrish. And a Yoyrish is an individual who very much, ultimately, will be inheriting these assets. The fact that he's ultimately going to be inheriting these assets should perhaps be an indication that he should be allowed to sell the assets, and it should not be considered a totally meaningless act, even according to Rameh holds other Machnadov Shaloi Belaylam. So maybe because of that, it should be considered somewhat meaningful. Our Gemara is teaching us that it's not. My Kusha says the Gemara, what is the basis for this discussion? Dilma Motzi Omar, Chanoich will tell the people who bought those assets from his father, Reuven, I am not coming as a Yoyrish of my father, and therefore you're asking, how could I undo what my father did? Because avu da abakasina, my connection here is because of my grandfather. That's how I became a Yoyrish here. And since I come here as a Yoyrish of my grandfather, so therefore, because the halacha is that if a person dies and his son is not alive, his grandson becomes his Yoyrish. Teda, the ksiv, the pasuk says, Tach sabasecha yir benecha, tishisem l'sorim b'chol ha'aretz. And from here, the pasuk says, in Tehillim, it was said to Reuven, Tachas avasecha, in the place of your father Yaakov, yir benecha, will your sons Chanoich bin. So we see that a grandson doesn't come to the assets because of his father. When his father is no longer alive, he comes to the assets because of his, directly from his grandfather, and as all the Rishonim explain, because of the concept of Bnei Bonim Kirei Bonim. And that's why I saw the Rishonim differentiate that there would be maybe a difference in this conversation if it's grandchildren, as the case that we're speaking about, Chanoich, who's coming to have this conversation with Lekuchas, versus different Yarshim. Maybe if the person, this Reuven who died, would not have had any children, and the people who are having the discussion with the Lekuchas are Reuven's brothers, the Gemara is speaking about the pasuk of Tachas Avasecha Yibanecha, which, as we just explained, speaks to grandchildren. So grandchildren are Yarshim from their grandfather, not because of their father. And therefore they say, our father is immaterial to this conversation. But it could well be, it's in Machlokas Rishonim, Rabbeinu Gershon Yad Ramah say that this point can be made by any Irish, and the Shita quoting the Rav, it says that grandchildren are unique, that B'nai Bonim Harei Kabonim, but not by anybody else. So many Mefarshim ask the question, the Pasuk is coming to teach us, as we just said, B'nai Bonim Harei Kabonim, and that is taught through the words, Tachas Avasecha Yir Benecha. What is the point of the Gemara quoting the entire Pasuk of Tishisemi Lasarim B'chol Aretz? So Rasha says, because this Pasuk is coming to teach us another halacha. The halacha is, that of course, as we have been learning very extensively in our Masechta, the halachas of Yerusha. And when it comes to financial, the children, whoever, are his Yarshim. But what's going to be there's another aspect to Yerusha. The other aspect to Yerusha is not the financial aspect, and that is the Srora. If a father is a Rav, or the father has a position of authority, then that, if the son is qualified to take over that position, the son takes it. The Pasuk is telling us that what happens if there's a grandfather who passed away, and his son is not an individual who's qualified to inherit his father's position of authority. Teaches us the Pasuk to see Shema L'Sarim B'chol Ha'aretz, that the grandchildren will take over that position of authority that the father that the son wasn't qualified to take. Which opens up a very interesting discussion that the Pesukim have. As we just said, that the Pasuk is telling us, it's not just a bracha, the Pasuk is actually telling us a halacha about Yerusha of Sarara. What, and that's why the halacha is that if somebody passes away, for example, the Ramah Paskins, that if a Rav passes away and he has a son who's qualified to be his successor, then the halacha is that he is the successor. And we're learning now that halacha applies to the grandchildren. But there's two questions that the Pesukim discuss. One question they discuss is, what's the halacha about a son-in-law? Particularly, and the question could even be drilled down further, as we've been learning in our sugis, that if there are no sons, the daughters are the Yarshim. So we could discuss this question in the simplest way, where there were no sons, but this Rav who passed away had daughters, and he had a son-in-law who is worthy of being the successor. Does he have kedima? Does he have preference for that position? So the Avodas HaGershuni and the Shaul Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak say a husband is connected to his wife, his ishtei kegufa is connected, is gets the Yerusha that his wife gets, but the wife doesn't get that rabbonis. The daughter of the Rav who passed away is certainly not going to be her father's successor. So that means there's no Yerusha as far as the rabbonin is, as far as rabbonis is concerned, and therefore her husband, the son-in-law, doesn't have any first rights to it. That's the opinion of Beis Yitzchak and the Avodas HaGershuni. But now the question comes up, does the grandson, that means there was a Rav that passed away, and he left over a daughter, and he daughter had a son. So it's a grandson of getting Yerusha. And the question is how to learn this Gemara. If we just learned, as the Rav explained this Gemara, that B'nai Bonim Harayim Kabonim, so what we're learning in our Gemara, B'nai Bonim Harayim Kabonim, it's not that he's an extension of his father, but he's a direct Yoirish of his grandfather. So since he's a direct Yoirish of his grandfather, because of the concept of Bnei Banim Kebanim, they want to suggest that a grandson, even a grandson, a son's daughter, is considered a Yairish. There are others that disagree, because certainly his Yerusha stems from his mother, and as we just said, the mother is not a Yairish as far as Rabbanus is concerned. So since the mother is not considered a Yairish as far as Rabbanus is concerned, it can't pass on to him. Also, there could be another wrinkle added to this discussion, and that is, what happens if there's a son, and the son is the Yairish for the finances, as we are discussing, but he's not qualified to be a Rav. So now the question will be, that certainly there's a stronger reason to say that the son-in-law, who may be qualified for the Rabbanus, doesn't have a right to that Rabbanus, because his wife is not a Yairish here at all. And similarly, even if we'll say grandchildren, daughters, sons, do have kedima, do have preference, that's maybe only in a case where their mother is a Yairish, meaning that she has no brothers. But in a case where the mother is not a Yairish because she has brothers, and we know, of course, as we've learned many times, that when there are sons, the daughters are not Yarshim. So in such a situation, certainly the grandson would not have preference. On the other hand, if we take the concept that the Ravid introduced into this Gemara, the concept of Bnei Banim Harem Kebanim, and if we say Bnei Banim Harem Kebanim means that they're direct Yarshim, so the fact that it was his mother shouldn't make, it's his mother who, that's how he became a grandson, shouldn't make a difference. So what we're learning now is, it's very understandable how Chanoich could say to the people who bought assets from Reuven that you have no claim here. So the question is, why is this Zui Kasha should be done in Mammonis? What's so difficult? Says the Gemara, Eliha Kasha. Says the Gemara, the question on the Halacha is because the Halacha was stated regarding a different situation altogether. The case was, when Ben B'choshim Mocha B'chelik B'chayra B'chay Aviv. Again, Reuven is Yaakov's B'chor. And therefore, upon Yaakov's passing, Reuven will be entitled to two portions, his portion as a son and his portion as a B'chor. And what he did was, he sold off that share that he's entitled to as a B'chor from while his father Yaakov was still alive, and then Umeis B'chai Aviv, and then Reuven died before Yaakov. B'noi, Chanoich, Reuven's son, Moitzim Yad L'Kuchas, even that share, the B'chor share that he sold, he could say, you don't deserve it. And says the Gemara, now we understand why there was a comment, V'zui Kasha B'dei Mammonis, why this is such a hard halakha to understand. Because Avur Mazbin, his father, Reuven sold these assets to these lekuchas Eyu Mapkuk v'chitema. So you'll say that Chanoich's claim will be, as we learned a moment ago, my claim here is because I'm the direct Yerush from my grandfather, and Reuven is not in the picture. Says the Gemara, if that's your claim, that you're coming directly. You, Chanoich, are coming directly from your grandfather, Reuven, but you are not a Bechor. The only reason that there's any right to this portion to be sold is because your father was a Bechor, not you, says the Gemara. Or my Kusha, why is that a problem? Says the Gemara, Dima Matzi Omer, Chanoich could still claim, I'm coming as a Yerush of my father, grandfather Yaakov. But Mokmav Kamina. But what that means is not that just that I'm coming as a Yairish directly from my father, from my grandfather Yaakov. But because I'm Reuven's son, I am considered a Bechor. And since I'm considered a Bechor, so the way the Rishonim explain this Gemara is that Chanoich is now Reuven. Chanoich is now Reuven in Hilchus Yerusha. The Chanoich is Reuven in Hilchus Yerusha he isn't Reuven. So there's sort of a dichotomy here. He is Reuven as far as Hilchus Yerusha, but he's not a Yoirish, he's not a Yoirish that he is Reuven. He's Chanoich. And Rabbi Chanan, the Kibbut Shurim, says, how would we understand this Gemara? The way to understand this Gemara, according to this explanation, is let's say Reuven was a Mumer, Rachman Slon, that under certain circumstances, the halacha is a Mumer forfeits his Yerusha. So according to the way we're understanding now, Chanoich has the halacha of Reuven as far as Hilchus Yerusha is concerned, and therefore if Reuven is Bechor, Chanoich is considered a Bechor. But on the other hand, Reuven, if Reuven was a Mumer, that wouldn't have any effect if Chanoich is not a Mumer. So that's so says Gemara, this is an understandable halacha. That couldn't be what it was meant to say. Zui kasha b'dinim mamnas. Says the Gemara, ikasha akasha. The question is as follows: Hayadele be'edus b'shtar atchloi nasagavim. Reuven was signed on a shtar before on a shtar before he was considered a gazlan, and the gazlan we know is possible for edus. And then nasagavim. For example, there was a shtar written on in Rosh Chodesh Nissan, and Reuven became a gazlan on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and he becomes posel for Eidus. And now, the Shimon, who is the holder of this document, wants to collect with this document. Hu eina meida ksav yodai. Reuven can, and we've learned many times, that in order to be able to collect with a shtar, you have to be mekayim the shtar. Kayim shtar means you have to verify. We've learned there are many ways of verifying a shtar. You bring edim that recognize the signature. The edim are testifying that this is their signature. We have another document that's a verified document, certified document with their signature. But now we have a problem. We don't have, this shtar is not yet verified, certified. How is going to be verified? By Reuven saying, this is my signature. But he can't say it's my signature. He can't be trusted. He now is a gazlan. And therefore, who ain't a made aksav yodai? He is unable to say testimony about his signature. Avla cherim made him. But somebody else can. So, because they're saying that this is Reuven's signature, and when that signature was signed, he wasn't a gazlan. Says the Gemara, now we understand the question. Hashti iuloi mehemni. If Reuven himself said that this is my signature, it would be useless because Reuven's a gazlan. When Achayim say it mehemni, how could somebody else saying about the signature make it effective? It says the Gemara, this was meant what when we said Vizui Kasha Bedini Mamanis, this is a difficult this halacha. Says the Gemara, my kusha, Dumma Shuchzuk Savyat Mebezdin. Maybe the Shtar was speaking about before Reuven was a gazlan. Bezdin certified the Shtar, and since it's a pre-certified Shtar, there's no issue. Eli Kasha Akasha. Hayodei Edus B'Shtar. Reuven was signed again on a Shtar, and they were relatives. And the halacha is, and at that point they were relatives, but Reuven could sign the shtar. They weren't such close relatives. And now, when the shtar is going to be relevant, he became a Yoirish. The example I saw the Rishonim give is that, let's say, Reuven is a great nephew of the person in the shtar. So that's not considered a close enough relative to make somebody a posel or edus. But now, when this entire about the shtar comes up, the person in the shtar passed away, Reuven, his great nephew, is his Yoirish. So who any Yochel Chaim Sav Yodai? He can't be used to verify the shtar because he's obviously in the Gei Bedover. He's going to, if the shtar is a true shtar, he's going to get the receivable. Aval Chayim Yochel Chaim Sav Yodai. And says the Gemara, my kush. And that's why it's difficult. Reuven can't say testimony, but other people can. Says the Gemara, the same as we said a moment ago, my kusha. This shtar was already certified prior, before all this came up. Reuven was signed on a shtar for Shimon, and at that point, Reuven and Shimon weren't relative. And then, Nasa Chasna, then Reuven became his son-in-law. And now we want to certify the shtar. Reuven can't say testimony that this is my signature, because he's a son-in-law. Avalcher made him, says the Gemara, and that's the difficulty, because who like Mehemin? Reuven can't be trusted about his signature. Acher Mehemni, can others be trusted? So, ask the Gemara, we had this question. V'chi tema, why don't we say here too, Hachin Nami was speaking about a case, that the shtar was already pre-certified before he became a son-in-law. Says the Gemara, v'ha, that answer cannot be given to this case, because says the Gemara, even in a case where the shtar has not already been certified prior to becoming an aid, we could still bring aidim that recognize the shtar, that recognize his signature, and as long as we bring aidim to verify the signature, even if it's after he became the son-in-law, it will be good enough. So the Tzais has a question. As we've been discussing in our shiurim, Eidim Chasum al Shtar, the halach is Eidim Chasum al Shtar, Nas Kamisha Nakri Edutsum Bezdin. A shtar is considered a very strong piece of paper. So the Tzais asks the question, this whole din that we've learned based on the famous Gemara's Masechta Ksubos Bakim Shtaris, is only the Rabbanan. So why is it such a big deal? For Kim Shtaris the Rabbanan, we could use a relative. So the Tzais answers that even though there are Paiskim that say we could use for Kim Shtaris relatives, that's only if he's one of two Eidim. So even though normally a relative as possible, even if he's one of two Eidim. By Kim Shtaris, we could use him if he's one of two Eidim. But our Gemara is speaking about a case that he's going to verify his signature all by himself. And therefore, we can't trust him. Actually, the Nesivis has a discussion here. The Nesivis discussion is when we say that a relative is Neman or not Neman, it's a much more fundamental discussion. He says that the issue at hand is how do we understand what happens when signatures are verified? Does verification of a signature represent just a verification of a signature? Or does verification of a signature really mean that you're saying Eidus all over again about what it says on the shtar? So he says, if the purpose of the verification is just to verify that this is my signature, so there we could understand why a relative is not necessarily disqualified. But if the purpose of the verification is not just to verify the signature on the shtar, but the purpose of the verification is to speak about what it says in the shtar, and if you're a relative now, so you can't speak about something that's relevant to your relevant, to your relative. And here the Gemara says, the way to understand that Braisa is not that we're speaking about a situation where it was certified prior to becoming a relative, because Rav Yois ben Menuhin Amar Rav Nachman says he could say that other people could say about his signature even after he became a relative, and therefore we have a question, if he himself couldn't do it, how could others do it? Or my kasha, maybe there's a Xeris Kosov. He, a son-in-law, can't say testimony on behalf of his father more. V'cherem Mehemni, and others can. Because the Gemara explains, V'lam Shana Meshaker. When we think about relatives, we think that the issue with relatives is because relatives are going to lie on behalf of their relative. That's not the way to understand that the disqualification of relative. The disqualification of a relative is because the Torah says that a relative can't say testimony. There doesn't have to be a why. If that's the case, the relative, the person who became the son-in-law cannot say testimony, but others who are not relatives will be able to say, relevant, others that are not relevant will be able to say testimony, and the question, therefore, falls away. And the best proof that anybody could say Eidus, because even if a relative says Eidus that's detrimental to his relative, he's not believed. The Dilei Teimachachi, and says the Gemara, I'm going to prove to you that the issue with relatives is not an issue of honesty. It's just what the Torah says. Because what's going to be halacha, Moshe of Aaron, the greatest people that ever lived in Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron, could they say testimony? When they're disqualified to say testimony for their son-in-law or their father-in-law, would their testimony be disqualified because they're not honest? How could we say that? Ella, how must we say? The Torah says, we don't have to understand, the Torah says that they can't say testimony. And therefore, here too, that you can't say it, but others can. So why is it such a difficult thing? So our Gemara has now established the reason relatives can't say Eidus is because of Gzeiras HaKosef. The Torah adds two more points. He says, if the concern is honesty, so what would be an halacha if somebody is saying testimony for his best friend, but he's not as relevant, not relative? Will he be disqualified? Of course not. But why? If there's a concern that people who have a relationship are going to lie, that should be consideration. And as we said a moment ago, relatives are always disqualified. Relatives are disqualified even in a case where the relative is saying something to the detriment of his relative. So we see it has nothing to do with honesty. The Beis Yosef quotes a Torah that if someone's testimony was rejected by Bezdin based on his relationship, let's say somebody was saying testimony for somebody who was his father-in-law, says the Itur, it becomes disqualified permanently. And even if afterwards he's no longer a son-in-law, let's say that they got divorced, the halacha is, here he can't say testimony anymore. And he explains why. Because even though a former son-in-law can't say testimony to his former father-in-law, here there's a concept of Ovid Inish Lachzuke Dvar V'Rishonim. Once you said testimony, you have a vested interest in that testimony, and you're going to stick to it even after you're not a relative. The Tumim disagrees. He said, if our Gemara is teaching us that the reason you're disqualified is not because we're concerned that you're going to lie. And now, adds the Iter, there's a concern that once you lied, people have a tendency to want to support what they said originally. But there's a Gzeiras HaKosef. And the way to understand the Gzeiras HaKosef is that as long as you're relatives, you may not say testimony. And once you're not relatives anymore, you may say testimony. And therefore, it doesn't make a difference under what circumstances. There's a very interesting discussion here in the Sefer Atta LaMashal. He discusses a situation where there's an individual who is a mashgiach in a kitchen. And the caterer in that kitchen, the manager in the kitchen, sees that there's product missing. Somebody stole product. And the question is that who stole the product? But there's a short circuit TV system in that kitchen, and they view the tapes, and they see that the mashgiach was the ganav. This is the case that we spoke in our Gemara, that a person, of course, a person who's a gazlan is possible for Eidus. And certainly the same would be a person who is a gazlan can't be a mashgiach. And the question is, he was the mashgiach in this kitchen all along. But now we see he's a Goslin. So the question is, if he was already a Mashgiach, before, if he was a Goslin already before the food was cooked, need we be concerned that the food can't be eaten because it wasn't prepared under proper Hashgacha? So certainly, as we just said, if the food was cooked prior to him being caught as a Goslin, so then he has a person has a Cheskes Kashrus until the Cheskes Kashrus is lost. So we start off with a Cheskes Kashrus, and he retains that Cheskes Kashrus. But what happens if the food was cooked before, after he already had stolen the food, and therefore at that point he was already a Goslin? So Rabbi Yoshev has a very interesting approach to this question. Rabbi Yoshev's approach to this question is that, what is the job of a Mashgiach? So Rabbi Yoshev suggests that the job of a Mashgiach is not just to make sure to watch that everything is being done properly, but what a big part of the Mashgiach's role, says Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal, is to create a mirsis, that the people who are working in that establishment, in that kitchen, are not going to do something wrong because they're scared of the Mashgiach. They're frightened by the Mashgiach. They don't want to do anything that he should see. They're wrong. The people, as they were cooking this meal, yes, this Mashgiach, as the meal was cooked, being cooked, was already a Goslin, but the people who are in the kitchen did not know that he's a Goslin. So as far as he's concerned, as far as they were concerned, he was a perfectly qualified Mashgiach. And what is the Mashgiach's job? The Mashgiach's job is to create a mirsis. That mirsis was created. And since that mirsis was created, even though in honest and truthfulness he was already a Goslin, it doesn't make the food not kosher. So now we've just learned almost an Amud Gemara of going back and forth with the Bishir began, that there was some halacha that we have a hard time understanding, but we haven't figured out what is that halacha. So says the Gemara, go back to the beginning of the Shir, that the story of the father of Reuven who sold the assets of Yaakov. Udaka Kashalach, the question that we asked, but now Chanoich is saying that I'm not taking the place of my father. I'm a direct Yoirish of my grandfather, as we explained, because of B'nai Bonim Areim Kabonim. And we proved it from the Pasuk and tell him, Tachas Avasecha Yir Benecha. And says the Gemara, Ahuba Brach. If that Pasuk is not to be used for a halacha, that is to talk about a bracha, that the Torah, the Pasuk is giving a bracha that people should have wonderful grandchildren. Ask the Marmi Matzot Amr Brach Ksiv. Are we going to say that that Pasuk is strictly there to teach us a bracha? Aval Inyan Din Aloy. It's not there to be taught as far as to be used for a halachic principle. Ask the Gemara Tanan. We're going to learn a Mishnah with Hashem that we learned on a Mishnah on Daf Kufnun Zayin. We spoke about a case, Nofel Abayis Olav Val Aviv, if that house fell on Reuven and on Yaakov, and we don't know who died first, Olav Al Mirishav, or Reuven and somebody who Reuven is going to Yarshin, Vaislok Sivas Isha Bal Choyv. And we spoke about Reuven had obligations, obligation of Aksuba, obligation of debts, and Yarshiav Amrim Ben Nesrishin. And the fathers, Yarshim, say that the son died first, Vakach Mesa'av, Ubalchai, and therefore the son never got anything. Ubalchai Vaimer know that the Oiv Mesrishin, that the father died first, Vakach Mesa'ben. And the Gemara continues, My love, who are the Yarshi'av? They're the sons of Reuven. Who are the Marishav of Reuven? Achim, the brother of Reuven. That a grandfather, when a grandson, can never say that I am a Yoirish or my grandfather, but rather he's really just replacing his father. And the Pasuk that we've been quoting, the Chiksev Tachas Avasecha Yibanecha, but Bracha, Chiksev is just teaching us a Bracha. So ask the Gemara if that's the case. Kimesa Bevakach Mesa Av. If the son died before, if Reuven died before Yaakov, And therefore we're saying that the Bali Chayv will be in a bad place. Namely, Bal Chayv, Yerushas Avim Kol Shokun. Why can't the Bal Chayv say that whoever is the Yerush, that you're really just replacing your father, and your father would have to have paid us? Says the Gemara, Loi. The case over there are, the case over here, that Yerusha Av are the brothers of Reuven. That means Reuven had no children, or Merishav are Achidavu, his uncles. And the Gemara here is differentiating, as we said earlier in the shir, between grandchildren and other relatives. Grandchildren, that means when we speak about Chanoich, when Chanoich is Yashning Yaakov, his grandfather, because Reuven died before Yaakov, Chanoich becomes a direct Yerush of Yaakov. And if Chanoich becomes a direct Yerush of Yaakov, so therefore the halacha will be that that the people who had a claim on his father, that claim has nothing to do with him. But when the people who are Yashning Reuven are not Reuven's sons, they're Reuven's brothers, they're Reuven's uncles, there everybody agrees that the way to look at their Yerusha, at their role in this Yerusha, is that just in the place of the person who passed away. If they're just in the place of the person who passed away, so then indeed there would be the claim that we're learning in our Gemara would be a valid claim. Continues the Gemara. By my name, Rav Sheshes. Ben, if we have a situation where Yosef died while his mother Rachel was still alive, and then his mother Rachel passed away, what would be the halacha? Is Yosef still Rachel's Yoirish? That means Yosef died without children. Who are his Yorshim? His paternal brothers. And the question is, will the paternal brothers become Yosef's Yorshim if Yosef predeceased his mother, that they'll get those assets even though they weren't related to Rachel at all? They just happened to have shared the same father but not the same mother. A father was kidnapped and he died where in the place of his captivity, Umeis b'nai b'medina, and his son also died at home, or vice versa, ben shenishba, Umeis ab b'medina. And there's a question is, who died first? Did the father die first? If the father died first, then his son yarshed him. And then when his son dies, his yarshim, in this case being his paternal brothers, yarshed him, or did the son die first, and then his paternal brothers won't yarshin him. Yarshi'av, so the halacha is Yarshi'aban v'yarshi'av yechleiku. And the Gemara drills down. Hey, Chidami, what's the case? Ilem k'tani, says the Gemara, what's the difference? Who died first? Haini Yarshi'av, haini Yarshi'aban. They're the exact same situation. Because if he didn't have any children, his brothers are the yarshim of the father. So why would it make a difference who died first? Allah kamer. What must be the case? The case must be Av Shenishba, a father died, Mace ben Bitoi b'Medina, and his daughter's son died here, or vice versa, ben Bitoi Nishba, or Mace Avi Ava b'Medina. The law Yadinan, Haimanai Mace Beresha, and we don't know which of these two individuals died first, the grandson or the grandfather. And this person has paternal brothers. And the grandfather has brothers. The daughter died a long time before. And now the question is, who is the Yerush? If his daughter's son died first, then the grandfather's brothers are the Yerushim. If the grandfather died first, then the brothers of this grandchildren are the Yerushim. And the halacha is, Yarshi'av, Yarshi'a ben Yechleiku. Says the Gemara, Vim Isa, if the halacha is that a son yarshins, even his mother, even when he's not here, so what's the difference, asks the Gemara? Nay, Nami, the Meis ben Merisha, even if the grandson will have died first, Lir Slavu, the Imi Bekevri, why doesn't he become the Yerush of his grandfather. He's a closer Yorish than his grandfather's brothers. And then, now that he's not here, and then his paternal brothers will yarshin him. That even though a son yarshins a mother, the halacha is, that's only if the son is alive. But ain't a ben yarish asim bekevel lahantchel la'achim and av. Amalei Rav Acha ben Yumna labaya afanan namitanina. We learned in our Mishnah. Nafal abayis alav al imai. We don't know who died first, the son or the mother. If the mother died first, then the son yarshins her, and then whoever his yarsh will get that yerusha. If the son died first, then her brothers will be her yarshim, not her son's paternal brothers. The halacha is ela ela vaydim shechleiku. Vim esa, if a son yarshins his mother, even when he's no longer here, he yarshins his mother when he is in the kever. So even nehinami, even it will say the ben meis bereisha that the son died first. Lirsalem bekevrei, he should still be the yarish. And then, now that he's not here, his yarshim, his paternal brothers, will be his yarshim. So says the Gemara, why not? We've learned so many times in our Masechta that even if people are not here, they still are yarshim. V'tamamai, answers the Gemara, Amar b'aya nemres siba b'ben. The Torah speaks about the concern of making sure that Yerusha is not taken away from a family. And the Torah says it in two different contexts. The Torah says, V'loisisa nachlo b'nei yisro b'mata al-mata, v'nemra siba b'baal, v'loisisa nachlo b'mata al-mata. Mas siba umu b'baal, ein abal yorishas ishta b'kever. We learned earlier in the Masechta that when a wife dies, her husband is a yorish, but that's only in the case where the husband outlived his wife. Af siba murba ben, ein aban yarshas ima bekev, l'achal l'achim and af. Says the Gemara, hu da amal l'chavri. Our Gemara continues speaking about chazokas. And the reason is because, as we've learned these questions, where there's a question who died first, the chazoka of who has the money plays a vital role. So says the Gemara, hu da amal l'chavri, nechsi de basisim zimilach. All of the property that I bought from Ben Sisson, I'm selling to you. But says the Gemara, we learned this Gemara earlier in Amasekta. Havachad Aradav Makri the Bein Basisin. There was one property that was called Bey Bar Sisson. Amalei, Halav the Basisin who. This is not a property that I bought from Ben Sisson. It just happens to be called Vikri the Makri Bey Basisin. Another one says, no, it's included in the parcels of property that you bought from Basisin. Asil Kamed Rav Nachman, they came to the entire to Rav Nachman. Okma b'yad b'lachman, b'yad l'kech. He said the buyer wins this entire. Amalei Rav Rav Nachman. So Rav says to Rav Nachman, Dina Hachad, did you pass incorrectly? Isn't there halacha moitz mechaver all of a raya? Ask the Gemara. V'rami the Rava, Rav Nachman. Rav's opinion seemed to be inconsistent. And Rav Nachman's opinion seemed to be inconsistent. Dud Amal Echavri, my boss by Beisei. Somebody said to somebody else, why are you in this home? Amalei Menach Svinta, I bought it from you. V'chalt Shnei Chazok, and I also have a Chazoka, as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, Parakheska Sabatim. Amalei, to which the person who's making the prostat says, you couldn't have achieved the Chazoka here, because Ano B'Shkuna Gavoy Hava. I was living in the inside rooms of this house, and I was there all the time. And the reason I didn't protest, because if I'm there, that's not the way you create a chazaka. Asla kamei de Rav Nachman. They came to Rav Nachman. Amalei zil b'cha achiloska. Prove that you achieved the proper chazaka. Amalei rovel Rav Nachman dina hachay. Hamaitse mechaveira olava raya. And he's there. If you want to take it away from him, he's the one. The other one has to prove it. So it says, ask the Gemara, Kosh the Rava, Rav Nachman ad Rachman. Here, Rava says that the buyer prevails. And before, by Basisan, Rava said that the seller prevails. Before, Rav Nachman said that in the case of the Basisan, Rav Nachman says the buyer prevails. And here Rav Nachman says the seller prevails. Answers the Gemara. The Rava like Asha. The seller is in the property. And therefore, anybody who wants the seller of the Basisim properties is holding the those properties. And therefore, you want to take it away from him. In this case, the person is living in this house. The person who's saying that you didn't create a chazaka is the Maitzi. When the property was being sold, he used the words Beibasisin or Makari Beibasisin. It doesn't have the same title as all the other properties. So therefore, it's called Basisin. So since it's called Basisin, and you want to say that it's different, Alei the day Rami Laglui de la Basisin. Even if he had a shtar, and the seller would have said that the shtar is forged, Milay Aminalei, wouldn't we say, Kum shtar b'yotchul kovenachsei, have kim shtar, and you'll be able to win. Here too, we say to him, if you want to win, you have to be able to prove your chazaka. And if you can't prove your chazaka, we can't let you have the property. Hadron loch mishmeis, hadron loch mishmeis, hadron loch mishmeis.